Welcome to Man Reads Monday. I am Aaron Ventura. He is Jacob Rush. Let's get to work. Jacob, what are we working through today?
Today, we're working through the last section of the durable trades. Before we get to the kind of not throwaway, but the one-off.
They're called honorable mentions.
Which, you know, if you ever ran track and field, you know, you got your honorable or your participation ribbon.
Yeah.
That's sort of what...
It's kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah.
But I think this, in my view, is the honorable mentions section is simply, I didn't have enough time or space to put in a book a full treatment of 41 other trades. So,
yeah.
I mean, with a research project like this, and that's really what this is. This is a research project to see what are the trades that have endured. And then, so in some sense, it's descriptive.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not going to give you, I mean, he'll give you sources.
Yeah.
Right. I'll go check this out. But he's not going to say, here's how you would become a butcher. And from start to finish, you know, investment, business plan, et cetera. That's not what he's interested in.
Yeah. So I think, if you're thinking about like who should read this book, I think this is the kind of book that someone who is like has no idea what to do with their life.
Yeah.
So there's some other questions, discipleship that needs to happen.
Yeah.
But if you just need ideas for like what are my possibilities, this has been a really eye-opening book for me to just think about as someone who like I have a strong sense of what I'm supposed to be doing in my life as a minister, but if I were to ever you know, either be kicked out of the ministry, defrocked, or out of necessity needed to be bivocational.
Yeah.
This has opened up a lot of new possibilities in my mind to think about, would I be interested in that? Would I enjoy that? Is the trade-off worth it? And then barriers to entry, right? Is it even possible to do this? And today I thought there's some really, so like a Sawyer, which is one of the ones we're going to cover today.
Sawyer?
Yeah. I would have never even like thought of that.
Yeah,
as a trade, nor would I have thought necessarily of the apothecary, which seems more like the drug dealer, the legal drug dealer,
or
the essential oils person, but a pharmacist, which apparently make buku bucks.
Oh, yeah.
Lawyer, some of these other ones I would know, or butcher, which is the first one we're going to discuss. So, so we're going to cover butcher, apothecary, counselor, Sawyer, and lawyer. Sawyer, lawyer.
Which... I knew a man named John Sawyer, and
is
one of those things, like, I didn't realize that it was a profession. I really didn't.
You now are at his desk.
That's right. I have the Sawyer spot.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh, so let's talk about the butcher.
Butcher. So this is pretty pretty self-explanatory in terms of what it is, what they
you
do.
You butch stuff.
You butch. Yeah.
Is butch a verb?
Not in the way, not in a...
not in the way that I used it.
not related to meat. Yeah, I mean... But yeah, so a butcher is somebody who, you know, he has this meat processor.
Yeah.
Somebody who takes animals. In our country, that's typically a cow or a pig, although I'm sure you could have
chickens.
Chickens, right? And cuts them up, skins them, guts them, and then sells it for meat.
You know, to bring the Sawyer in, the butcher does to animals what the Sawyer does to wood.
One of those like similes is to, it's exactly right.
You're taking the raw material and turning it into something useful for the end consumer. And it's kind of there is a long historical precedent of it. I was recently, I made a chart for myself just because I'm memorizing stuff out of the Old Testament of the whole Levitical sacrificial system.
Oh, yeah.
So walking through each offering, who does what. And so if you were a Israelite, you had to kill animals all the time. Mm. If you were a priest, you needed to actually, you were basically a butcher because there were specific parts that the Bible describes. You got to cut it open, take out the entrails. It gives very descriptive, like what organs you take, who gets what, and then what pieces of meat you get to eat. And if you have ever done any amount of cooking or shopping for meat, you know that there is the choice portion, which God gets. So God gets the filet mignon. And then there are the less choice portions.
Angus.
Yeah. which, you know, the tougher meat, the stuff you got to chew on for a bit. So I just thought this is definitely a historically stable trade.
Yeah.
And here's probably one of my favorite little factoids from this section. It's that per capita consumption of meat, so before I tell you listeners what it is, just think about this. How many pounds of meat do you think that you eat per year? Okay, so that's one question, you as an individual. And then think, what is the per capita in United States pounds of meat eaten? And do you know what it is, if you read the book?
Yeah.
179 pounds per year.
Oof.
Which I don't know if that surprises me as being high or low.
Yeah.
Jacob, both you and I are below 179 pounds, right, as far as I know,
yeah.
Just by my appearance.
If you're below 179. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
That's... So we're eating more than our own body weight, but I suppose we got to replace this flesh on us with flesh
eat
from
the
other.
Meat, right. Yeah. No, it does make sense when you think about it. I think in my mind, I would have thought it was more. Just guys, think about, well, I guess, because you know, you think about, you have an 8-ounce sirloin,
yeah,
right? Or you have a 12-ounce steak or something.
Yep. And 8 ounces, 16 ounces is a pound,
right? 8 ounces is half a pound.
Yeah.
And you know, but I guess we don't think about, we think of steak or meat like that as a special occasion when we're paying attention to it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, you have chicken, you know, you have chicken for dinner, or you cut up meat for a taco or something.
Yeah. So let's think about this. 365 divided by 179. So, wait, that can't be right. No, that is right. I did that wrong. I should do 179 divided by 365. So we eat basically a half pound of meat a day, like on average. Now, of course, some people are going to have way more than that depending on
their diet
and what you can afford. If you're just on like the rice and beans college diet, as I know some people who did that, and then you get into the, you know, my uncle, he told me one time, you know, the thing about like being wealthy, having a lot of money is basically like not a lot changes except that you eat a lot better food. Like that's what he just told me. He's like, one of the like nice things about being wealthy is you just eat better food. And I thought about that as a college student living with them at the time. Yeah, I guess that's pretty true, you know? I remember when I was eating a cup of noodles in high school and, you know.
Because if you can't, you know, if you have the choice between buying the ramen noodle pack, which is, you know, 70 cents, less than that.
I think it's a lot less than that.
Like 30 cents.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a 12-ounce steak, that's, you know, $15 to buy a nice, just one steak.
You
can go for the steak.
Yeah, I mean, just last night, I was just having a rough day, and at the end of the day, my wife's like, can I do anything for you? And I told her, you know, I would really like some bacon. And so my wife went to the kitchen. It's like, I don't know, 8:30 at night. And she just made me some like thick cut bacon. And that's what I ate.
This is a comfort food for a man.
So it was, you
know, girls
blessing.
Go chocolate, you know, guys go bacon.
Yeah, she had one slice. See, my wife, because she's nursing, she has to eat all this. She's always hungry, like eating protein and stuff. So she actually, basically from the time she got pregnant through now, she's still nursing, she just has to eat so much protein. So we're like, that's actually what got us onto eating all of this meat. I did the butcher box thing.
Yeah.
I was cooking her steaks because she did not want to eat anything. She would send me to like Wendy's for sometimes just to get like chili from Wendy's. Weird cravings, but she was just eating like yogurt with lots of protein. And I was like, that's gross when you eat too much. So I was like, I need to make you a steak, which she had never really had before.
What?
Yeah, so now I'd be making them steaks. Okay, we're getting like, we're going way
too
long.
Well, the point is, it's a resilient trade because everybody eats meat, and Americans in particular really like their meat. So is there anything else? The some of the maybe issues with it, family-centeredness, it's kind of hard to, you know, little Johnny, you know, I mean, but historically you think about it like these shepherds.
They could do stuff with the chickens. You know, as a kid, you could learn to like defeather a chicken.
Maybe even skin something. It's not very, in our Americanized, like, sense squeamishness, we wouldn't like, you know, we probably wouldn't like it, but it's possible, but it, at any rate.
It's unlikely. You know, maybe you'll have a farm basically, but then we're back to a farmer.
Shepherding,
yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, if you want to get into this, so if you're just like a grocery butcher, you don't make very much money. Like the median income is only like $31,000. But if you were, you'd have to kind of own your own place and have some specialty. Or I think what would make this cool is, say you're really good at this, or say you had a shepherding background and also some skills in the kitchen, you could sell directly to consumers, kind of like that meat locker does.
Yep.
Or in a place where there's lots of hunters, you're processing their meat. I think there's a lot of ways where if that was like, if I saw an Instagram ad, let's say, right, I'm scrolling on Instagram and I see an ad for a butcher shop that has that kind of direct to consumer either selling so I can get the meat, I think, oh, if it's well priced and high quality, I will totally opt for that.
Yeah.
Also, if I was a hunter, or if I just thought, you know, I don't want to do all this myself, I could,
I raise animals, I don't want to kill them.
Yeah, but I don't want to do the butchering part, then I would know. And if like they had a website with the rates on it, that would actually help me decide, do I want to go into this? So I think the sky's the limit when you're creative, but it is going to take a bit of startup capital to have a facility that it complies with sewage and all that stuff. So to become a butcher, you just have to learn the trade, but to run a successful business, that's a whole nother thing. And that's kind of true for all of these trades. All right,
next apothecary. Up.
Yeah, apothecary.
Pharmacist.
So
this is actually, I mean, relatively straightforward. You know, medicine has always been around.
Yeah. As long as people been sick, there's been people trying to make them not sick.
Right. And, you know, and so, that's like one of those like shower thoughts. Like, wow.
How do you clean soap?
So as long as there've been sick people, you got sick remedies. Yeah. And that is ranged, you know, historically from you crush up some herbs in powder.
What is this? Thyme and vinegar? Is that, that's what it says? Everyone knows thyme. Thyme. Applied with vinegar, it dissolves new swellings and clots of blood and takes away thymos and hanging warts. Gross. And that was by Dioscorides in De Materia Medica, AD 70.
Yeah. So we've come a long way.
Yeah. But I actually have some thyme in my fridge right now. And I was just like, when I read this, I thought, now, if I had some swelling somewhere, I would totally just try this to see if this actually works.
Yeah.
And I would report back, but I do not have any swelling.
Yeah. And he actually makes an interesting comment about alternative medicine and the increasing role it plays in modern healthcare.
Yeah. Allopathy versus homeopathy.
Right. So that's another part of the conversation, right? You've got kind of a more holistic, homeopathic care versus the maybe the more traditional contemporary.
Kind of Western medicine.
Western medicine.
That's pretty interventionist.
And what it's become, particularly with, you know, just increasingly complicated medicines and drugs, really powerful drugs, which, you know, you're seeing adverse side effects now.
Yeah. That's a huge, like, debate.
Yeah.
Conversation. One that, you know, I've read books from, you know, both sides, and I don't know that I have strong convictions one way or another. So maybe we'll save that for another episode.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, they are somewhat diametrically opposed, because one is trying to help your current immune system to fight off, strengthen it, where one is kind of disregarding that, and then it's going to have possible side effects that you have to then treat with other drugs. So there are two kind of completely different philosophical approaches.
Right.
And I still have yet to see a robustly Christian doctrine of medicine and healing that takes into account a biblical anthropology and tries to do it from Christian presuppositions.
Yeah.
I've not come across that yet. So if you do know about that, send it to me.
And this connects to, obviously, so this is thinking about the Western side. And the benefit of it, even if it's ethically wrong, no, I'm just kidding, is that it makes tons of money.
Yeah.
Right? So what is that there? Independent owners of, like, say you own your own pharmacy.
Yeah.
Right?
Mom and pop pharmacy shop.
Mom and pop pharmacy shop. I'm not a rapper. They can make as much as $250K to $300K.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is that you've got to get that PhD. That doctor of pharmacy takes a lot of time and a lot of money.
And possibly debt. Yeah, it says the average indebtedness for a pharmacy student is $110K. However, I mean, just the median pay is $126,000. So we're talking, this is in the whole book, one of the highest paying trades.
Scores of 100%.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because, so you do have to get a doctorate or a doctor of pharmacy. The other possible problems with this is the increased automation. So
right.
if there was a way, or if there is becoming more automation, and then your competition with big box stores. So like if I need a prescription filled, I probably just go to like Walgreens or Safeway, or even Walmart has.
And government subsidies play a part of this, right? And so how regulated is the industry? And I think it'll probably get more and more regulated. So that's something to consider as well.
Yeah. So it's not very family-centered, really, at all.
Right? Here, Johnny, help me mix some provoloptoline.
and I think you also have to be up for all of the red tape, not just from the government side, but on the insurance side, which if anyone has ever worked with insurance companies, it's not exactly your favorite phone call to have to make, depending on your insurance.
No bueno.
Okay, let's talk about the counselor or the consultant / advisor.
I'm a consultant.
Yeah.
I consult. Yep. So this is actually interesting. So counselor, not thinking therapy here, like
Not lay on the couch kind of thing. Although I suppose that would be one possible subset of giving someone life advice.
Yeah.
So this is like an enormously broad category, right?
Yep. So consultant, advisor, and I love that the example here is Daniel.
Yeah.
Right. In every matter, and this is the quote at the beginning, in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this kind of historical role of the advisor, right? The man of wisdom, the wise man, it would be another way of doing it, of kind of cashing it out.
Yeah. And so it's just, here's some examples of this, because when you're talking about like income, there's going to be a total huge range here, anywhere from very little, or you're doing it on the side, or even voluntary. Like if you are on a board of advisors, or you know, sometimes those aren't paid positions necessarily.
Right.
You just have some
trustee board or something.
Yeah. Whereas if you're doing that for your job as a consultant, the example of in here is of a fundraising guy. But so someone like your financial advisor. So that's a counselor, or a business or marketing consultant. You just want to sell more widgets, or you need a rebrand or something. I think of even like what our friend Darren Doan does as a creative agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sort of kind of they do the marketing, they're producing stuff, but they also are offering a bunch of kind of advice. Here's like how you should run your social media stuff. So the sky's kind of the limit here. And one of the examples, or one of the notes here, is that this is where being specialized, and this is going to come up again with the lawyer, but specialization is king here, because the kind of advice you want is from someone who has a very niche level of knowledge, wisdom, who that is beyond like what you can Google on the internet.
Right.
So if you possess that, if you have achieved that, perhaps after 20 years of excelling in a certain trade,
right.
in some sense, this can be like a mother to all the other trades, in that you could mentor someone as they're trying to get their butcher shop going, just as a business finance consultant or accountant consultant.
Yeah, it's sort of like a way of, talk about accruing wisdom, spending time with those who are wise, like time is money, that sort of thing, is you're seeking out somebody who has the lived experience, who can speak to that, and in doing so, you're shortcutting learning it yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it valuable. That's what makes it worthwhile to have those kind of mentors, is that they're able to speak from 40 years of being in business management. And they can say, this was a good idea. This is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Here's what you should do. If I could do it all over again. And that kind of information is very valuable.
Yeah. I mean, I spend a lot of my time, I realize, when I'm talking to guys or giving them advice, like I'm in some sort of counseling kind of role. But a lot of the times my advice is, oh, you want to go into this field? You should talk to this person. So a lot of the time advice is a networking thing. I'm connecting them to someone who has a very niche level of expertise. And man, as we've noted in this book already, having mentors, someone to teach you the trade who has a passion and skill for it, that's discipleship, and that's also kind of one of the main fast tracks to being able to excel in whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, and just as like a personal side note, become the kind of guy that people seek out for advice, right? Even if you're not going to become a professional counselor or advisor, I think we all should aspire to be the wise man, an elder of the city who stands in the gates, that young men want to come and imitate, and young men say, "Is that man? That man is managing his house well. He's diligent in his work. He stands before kings. Let me learn from him." Yeah. I think that's just an admirable goal for us to seek, no matter what trade it is that we actually do.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole point of this podcast, Man Reads Monday. There's been a heavy focus on wisdom, wealth, stewardship, those kinds of things. And hopefully this gives you another range of options for what to do. All right, the last two, the sawyer and the lawyer. So the sawyer, we already mentioned, they convert logs into dimensional lumber, 2x4s, 4x6s, 2x6s, all the different non-true measurements, right? You're like, that's a 2x4? That's not 2 inches by 4 inches. I remember when I first started realizing that, I'm like, okay, this is just a euphemism for whatever they want to make.
It changes. 2x4.
Yeah, it's kind of like the... if you've ever looked in or tried to remodel a very old house from like 100 years ago, you realize, yeah, they had different building standards, different building materials, and there were different periods where sometimes it was better than others. But anyways, a sawyer is someone who's taking those logs and turning it into lumber. And we actually live somewhat close to a number of these kind of logging forestry towns.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, because I was confused, the sawyer is different than a logger.
Right.
Right? Which is kind of, but they're obviously closely related, and you often see them working in tandem.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and it'd be good to actually have... Say, if you get the portable sawmill, to also have the skill to be a cutter, a wood cutter.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, you know, somebody who turns already felled trees into lumber that then the woodworker is going to use and build. So you can see, especially these top 20 trades are kind of a networking, a combination of these various primary sectors.
I remember he talked about, in order to like increase that durability, if you can have multiple trades or kind of like diversify some of your skills. And I think this is a great example where, like, if someone just needs a tree removed, like a huge tree removed from their property. And so this is funny. So one of the ways that my mom and her partner ended up doing all of the work they're doing, government bids and stuff, was they put on this festival called Old Mill Days. It's out in Washington. It's no longer going, but they would have these wood carvers come from all around, and they carve statues, basically things that look like idols, totem pole kind of stuff. Amazing artists with chainsaws, right? And they also had competitions, you know, climbing and cutting and speed and all that stuff. And it's such like a niche thing, like where you'd go to the fair to see that kind of thing happen. So he knew all of these loggers, and this job came up for them to fell, I don't know how many hundreds and thousands of trees, a government bid to do that. And my mom's partner, John, was like, we can do this. We have the people to do it. So they went, knocked it out. They did it well. It was extremely profitable. And they realized, what other things can we do? And started figuring it out.
Yeah.
Now, if you, as just a homeowner, and it's a stormy season, have a big tree in your front yard that you don't want to fall on your house, if there was someone that you knew who had the skill both to cut that down and repurpose the wood for you or for sale or for whatever, that's like a good business. Like, that's something that probably everyone who's a homeowner with trees on their yard could make use of if you're good at it and you're safe.
Yeah.
So become a sawyer.
Become a sawyer. What is there anything else about this? Well, family centeredness. I think the lower score for that is just because it's dangerous.
Stay away from the wood chipper, Johnny.
Johnny's hand and the wood chipper. Watch out. But the ease of entry, again, as some of these primary things, it just has to do with manual physical labor.
Yeah.
Like chop down a tree.
And not heavy. That expensive.
Yeah.
To tools, start. Right? It's a few thousand bucks for a 5K for a
portable
sawmill.
I didn't know that. Like, imagine just like, I'm gonna buy
just a pull up. You know, you like pop up truck. Yeah, pop up stop. Okay, let's get to the lawyer last one here. And as you would expect, very high income, a median wage of 120K. What do they say? You know, doctors, lawyers, and is it politicians? Maybe not.
make a bunch of cash.
Yeah, but the lawyer, like the apothecary, like the doctor, high income, but also extremely high barriers to entry. Got to pass the bar, got to go to law school, and possibly accumulate a significant amount of debt.
Right. Low family centeredness as well. You know, because again,
what are they going to do?
What are they going to do?
I mean, we were joking about this last time, weren't we?
Oh, sorry, Kenny. Yeah, but yeah, you have that problem. You know, you have your you can teach your kids maybe to file briefs for you. Yeah, or maybe organize the or argue around the dinner table. It'd be, you know, a disputatio, read Aquinas to them. Maybe that's the best way to prepare them to be a lawyer. But in terms of, you know, tangible assets, unless you're going to subsidize your child's education to help them become a lawyer and then pass off your firm to them.
Yeah.
But it's hard because, again, it's dependent on so many other factors along the way.
Yeah. It's funny when so he mentions here of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, 25 were lawyers, right? Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. I also think of Calvin, who was a lawyer, and how many during the kind of Reformation period had backgrounds in law.
Yeah.
And that was what they were skilled in. And you see how some of the most brilliant theological minds were originally trained in law and then were able to, because, I mean, we call a section of our Old Testament the law. And there's a lot of legal code there to work through and argumentation. So there's a certain frame of mind that the lawyer has that crosses over into other areas like theology.
Right. And then historical stability of it, right? Where you have governed people, you have law. So, I mean, you know, there's...
By definition.
There's that. There's parts of that where it's like, well, you know, when there's a revolt, a rebellion, civil war, where law becomes less important. But at some point, there's going to be society and somebody has to judge between.
Yeah.
So.
And as we're experiencing here in Moscow, we need good Christian lawyers, good Christian judges on both sides, right?
Yeah.
Both offense and defense are... What's the...
defense attorney and the prosecutor.
Yeah, prosecutor. Right? That was the word that was eluding me. And so I think this is a worthy field to go into. And this is also where the little profile guy mentions, if you want to exceed in law, become the easiest way to practice law, he says, is to become an expert in and known in one specific kind of field. So whether that's in property or, you know, you're a divorce lawyer or religious liberty or constitutional things, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He says that's the easiest way to be successful. And because there are with law is where you don't want to be a generalist, apparently. Right? It was like, are you a good lawyer? I don't know. Depends on the case. Right.
Yeah.
And so whether you are
family law,
the dude getting Cochran, right? If you're getting OJ off, right? It's like, okay, there's some questions there. But you want to become the best at whatever it is you're doing. Okay,
good stuff.
Well, Jacob, we have finished the first 20 trades, and what we're gonna do, what we're gonna do next week. So next week is the final episode covering durable trades, depending on if we're going to interview Rory. I'm not sure if we will or not. We'll see. But what we're going to do, and if you who are listening want to do this as well, so we're going to pick, what did we say, three?
Three.
We're going to pick three of the honorable mentions. We'll see if we pick any that overlap that we liked or we thought were interesting or we had something interesting to say about it. And then we'll have some kind of concluding remarks about the book. If you are listening to this, reading along, let us know. What did you think of the book? We have a Facebook group if you want to share. You know, do you have criticism, feedback, things that were your big takeaways from it? We want to hear from you.
We want to hear from you.
We want to hear from you. But only if you have something worthwhile to read.
Make it count.
Yeah. And then just a reminder, after this, we are going to be reading Joe Rigney's book, More Than a Battle. So go ahead and order that. It's a brand new book that just came out, and that will be our next book on Man Reads on Monday. Okay. Jacob, what should people do next week, this week?
Every day of their lives, Aaron.
Yeah.
Every day, no matter what day it is, you need to wake up. You need to get that wisdom, build that house, rule that big fat belly, and stack dollars for your grandpa.